You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our Policy Insight today on Europe, India, and Prime Minister Modi. I'm Shada Islam. I'm Director of Policy at Friends of Europe. Now, it's been 1 year since the Indian Prime Minister took over, and I think you'll all agree that he's been shaking up India, and he's been shaking up world perceptions of India. That's very important as well. We at Friends of Europe think it's high time that India and the EU upped their engagement, got the relationship off to a new, a fresh start. As John Lennon famously sang all those years ago, it's time to start over. So for more information on how we think this should be the case, please do read our commentary and op-ed that we've just released. There is a magic recipe, and it's got three elements to it. First, I think it's really important that this long-standing FTA, these negotiations, are finally clinched, that we get a deal, and the sooner the better. I think it's also important that India and the EU start working on a beyond trade agenda, a more practical, pragmatic program of action. There's a lot in Prime Minister Modi's new India strategy, and with Juncker as well, Jean-Claude Juncker, many new things are coming up on both sides, in Brussels and in Delhi, and I think there's a way that we can synergize and work together on a new agenda for action. And finally, really important, there has to be another EU-India summit. There hasn't been one for 3 years now, and it's high time that the leaders got together and gave some new energy, some new oomph to this relationship. So we're really delighted to be organizing this conference today, and it's our third conference that we've organized with Tata Consultancy Services, TCS, and really happy now to welcome as well Natarajan Chandrasekharan, who is CEO, Chief Executive Officer of TCS, and Managing Director as well. Now, Chandra doesn't really need an introduction, but I'm just going to say, Chandra, you've been given several names, if I may say so. Business Leader of the Year, Best CEO of the Year, Outstanding Business Leader of the Year. And these are just some of the accolades you received. So having Chandra here is a real privilege. And just to prove that this is no ordinary panel on India, we're also delighted to welcome my old friend Shishir Bajoria. He's a leading industrialist in India, a leading star politician, and a new convert to the BJP, which is also very interesting. So thank you, Shishir, for coming. In fact, no Friends of Europe conference would be possible, would actually have the same punch without you here. So thank you again for coming from India. Joining Chandra and Shishir on the panel are Zoran Stanchich, Deputy Director General at the European Commission's DG Connect. Thank you for being here, Zoran. He used to be Slovenia's State Secretary for Science. And last but not least, Luisa Santos, my old friend, Director for International Relations at Business Europe. And she's here because of Business Europe, of course, but also because you've been involved in some kinds of industrial ventures, textile ventures in India. So we have an exciting 90 minutes ahead of us. But first, let me give the floor to Ambassador Manjeev Puri of India. Ambassador.
Thank you, Shada, and thank you very much that I am not lunch today. Ladies and gentlemen, I am delighted to be here in your midst, and I want to say a very big thank you to Friends of Europe, who have been for us an extremely important arm in reaching out to the European community, to all of us, and for making India visible here in Brussels. We are very grateful to you, Shada, in particular. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, I'm honored to see Her Excellency, the Ambassador of Bangladesh here, Member of Parliament and the Chairman of the Delegation for Relations of India, Mr. Geoffrey von Orden, former MEP Paulo Casas, and so many other friends here. Thank you very much for all of you. Today you have, of course, two very important people from Europe here, from the Commission as well as from Business Europe. Both of them are good and old friends of mine, but you also have two heavyweights from India, from the area of business and industry. Tata Consultancy Services, which I think requires no introduction here at all and makes me as the ambassador extremely proud, and Mr. Bajoria, who, as Shada has introduced, is an individual who mixes business with active politics and is now absolutely on the right side of things out there in India. Shada, I won't take up much of your time, but I want to say thank you very much to you for having emphasized the point that not only are India and Europe, the European Union, the two largest democracies in the world, we are large trading partners with each other. For India, you are the largest trading partner of India. For the European Union, we are among the 10 largest trading partners of the European Union. Business has been growing. The area of services has particularly been of great interest to us, and I'm glad to see strong presence here on that. Indeed, just a couple of months back, we did an event with the European Commission just in the next building of Microsoft on Digital India and the single digital market here, because we think this is an area in which not only can there be cooperation, but really we can have a cooperation which results in win-win. Ladies and gentlemen, the other major area of interest to us is the entire business of development in India. Obviously, as a very large economy, but one in which we have really miles to go, we count on Europe as our old, trusted, and reliable partner for technology, for financing, and to plug into the new initiatives which our government has taken in a big way. Make in India is certainly the most prominent one of them, to make India a major manufacturing hub. We also have smart cities, and there are several other of these kind of major initiatives. We count on your support. Shada, you mentioned the question of linkages and ensuring that these institutional mechanisms move ahead and then deliver. I need to thank Jeffrey for having led a delegation from the European Parliament which visited India in March. We have the Speaker of the Indian Parliament with a large parliamentary delegation arriving in Brussels next week. Our Commerce Minister and the EU Trade Commissioner recently met on the sidelines of the OECD meeting, and we hope that we will be able to put together the big event that we believe can kickstart many of these particular things at the highest political level before hopefully the year is over. There are conversations going on in that. I do believe that politics has an important role to play. It has a leadership thrust ability. It has the ability to push things forward. But I do believe that business, on the other hand, is that engine which results in political leaders, in society leaders, and everyone else also looking to try and bridge the gap and move things forward. Shada, thank you very much for this opportunity. I hope to sit there and learn a lot, even about my own country. Thank you very much, Mr. Chandrasekharan, TCS, the European Commission, Shishir, and Business Europe. Grateful to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Manjeev, for that. And I also want to thank Sunil Prasad from the EU India Chamber of Commerce for his very active participation in making this event come true. As Ambassador Puri has said, Modi's agenda for transformation of India is indeed very wide. And I think we're going to try and focus on three elements of it. First of all, on Make in India, which Manjeev talked about as well. And, you know, Mr. Modi has said he's waiting for the world, the entire world, with open arms. So how far will this embrace actually go? And second, Digital India as well. Now, we know that Mr. Modi himself is what they call a digital native. He loves taking selfies, and he's on Twitter as well. He's got an enormous number of followers. So we're going to try and see where the synergies are there as well. And, of course, how can EU and India get back on track, get this relationship back and engagement again? So the rules of the game, people who come to Friends of Europe events know. I'm going to ask the panelists a couple of questions, then open the floor for interaction with yourselves, so many people with so many ideas and expertise in the room. I have a very modern digital agenda myself. This clock will keep time. So Chandra, when you see that the sands of time have run out, that means your first intervention is over. So I'm going to kick off really with you, Chandra. So we've talked a lot about the digital India that Modi has in mind. But India really falls way behind in the ICT Global Development Index. It's not there yet. When you look at what, when you listen to what Mr. Modi is saying, what is the vision do you think there is, and what are the challenges that India has as it strives to meet those ambitions?
I think first of all, it's a great pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me. And it's a real privilege. I think when you look at what is going on in India, first I would like to make a few points. Mr. Modi has come to power with a huge mandate, a majority government in the last three decades, very strong democracy. Clearly, he is not only a strong leader, he is very inspirational as well. Very inspiring. It's very difficult to listen to him in a speech and then not get inspired. You just cannot walk out of that meeting without getting inspired. I would like to see all the things that he is aiming to do. He came on the promise of development. He came to power on the promise of development, as you know. And all the initiatives have to be looked at in context. If you look at the growth rate in the last few years, India has not lived to its potential for a variety of reasons. Some of it is our own making, some of it is the global economy and everything else. Now, in the last 1 year, what has happened is that, first of all, he has kind of revitalized the whole energy, not only in India, but also with everyone looking at India, whether it is the investor community, whether it is from the US, whether it is partnering nations. You look at the India, Japan, India, US, India, UK, India, China, India, Bangladesh, India, every part of the world. I think there is a lot of interest and a lot of things going on. And if you look at the major initiatives, each one of them are strategically very important. Whether some of them may look very, very simple from a European lens. You take something like a Clean India, Swachh Bharat, we call it. It has got a very profound impact, because when you address the Clean India, I think the number of girl children who will be going to school will dramatically increase. It is about increasing the throughput. And it has got, you can go on, you can talk about it for some time. Second is, if you take a Make in India, or if you take a Jandhan Yojana, how you've been talking about financial inclusion, how do you get real inclusiveness so that people can participate, not only achieve economic growth, how do you create the ecosystem and infrastructure by which the participation will be at a much broader base across the country. It has got a very, very important significance under the Digital India. See, Digital India is also to be seen in light of India's problems. I think it is one of the most profound initiatives. All three, four of them are, I think, very significant. But coming from where I come from, I would say Digital India has a huge impact. Huge potential to make an impact. First of all, it has got three major planks, the program itself. One is creating a digital infrastructure, which is extremely important considering the population and the rural base that we have. A huge digital infrastructure is very important, whether it is networks or whatever else that goes with it. Second one is modernizing the government, because we have a lot of bureaucracy and we have a very complex structure. We've got a federal structure, state structure, and many of the initiatives have to run across departments. The only way to do it is to modernize the administration through digital. And the third one is skills. As you know, we have 50% of our population below 25 years of age. We are talking 600, 700 million people. And we will be putting another 130, 140 million graduates in the next, I don't know, before 2025. And given that kind of that kind of a population and that kind of a demography, it becomes extremely important that you focus on skill building. And also, many of the skills that we are building using digital technologies is not only with regard to normal academics, it's also to vocational. How can you educate a welder? How can you educate a construction worker? How can you increase the productivity of these people? So I think the Digital India also aims to create about 17, 18 million jobs, direct jobs, and an estimated 80 million indirect jobs. I think if you put it all together, I think it's a very, very significant initiative. And India has got a track. See, many people, we work in projects across the globe. And one thing I will tell you, the e-governance projects that we have executed in India is among or probably the most complex projects you can think of anywhere else in the world, because of the size, complexity, and the infrastructure we have built across the globe. And you take the recent one which we completed in the last 4 years, which has been operational, is the passport project. And I can tell you, any Western citizen or a Western government who visits India to visit our passport process center, they will save your miles ahead because of the digital infrastructure that has been put in place, because of the swiftness, because of the transparency, the SLAs, the speed with which we can get those things processed is just dramatic. And executing those projects and any such large-scale transformation projects in governments across the globe, I can tell you, has a huge chance of failure. Most of the projects in every other country, I can give you examples how many projects have failed. But whether it is an income tax, again an income tax system in India, which is completely online, and or the passport project, the success, the great rigor with which the execution has happened, also I have to give it not only to the people like us, but to the government. So I think India has a great ability to execute. I think Digital India is a superb opportunity.
Chandra, how what you're saying is almost a revolution in terms of how India has worked so far, or at least the image of India, slow bureaucracy, inertia. How is the change coming? How has the change been manipulated? How has it been done? How is it that companies like yours are now very much part of this change that is coming across in India? What's different about Modi?
See, I think, you know, the first 1 year, I think it's very difficult to say how much has been done in 1 year, because one year is a very short period of time. So I feel that the initiative that have been launched and the direction and the how the jigsaw are all hangs fantastic, but it's going to take time, because India is a complex country. And any such major initiative to actually percolate down and operationally get executed and the results to be seen, it's going to take some time. For you talked about India lags in the ICT index. But, you know, not only my company, but if you look at the Indian ICT sector, I think we provide absolutely a top-notch solutions and partner with the finest companies in the world. If you take a Fortune 500 companies, I'll be very surprised even if you can name one of them which do not partner with one or the other Indian technology company. So we have built a huge industry. Our industry in 1991 was 100 million. 1991, our industry was 100 million. And our industry today is 146 billion. From 100 million in 1991 to 146 billion in somewhere now. And it is projected to be crossing 225 billion in another about 7, 8 years, 2021, 2022. And it has also shown that it can have a huge impact on jobs, because we have a direct jobs of about 3 million and indirect jobs of another 9 million. And in the next 7-8 years, we'll create another 10 million jobs, direct jobs, and 30 million indirect jobs. That's the opportunity that exists. But it's not about jobs and it is not about the revenue growth, but the knowledge and the know-how and the skills that are required for the transformation is there. It is a question of how you can bring all this in the context of India, in the context of transformation of India. That's the challenge. And for that we also require, like you will say, for European companies to benefit in the India opportunity, they will need policies. Similarly, we also need policies. So it's not because, you know, things may be there, you have to put it all together. But the opportunity is there.
So it's a question of mobilization. Thanks, Chandra, for that first intervention. Zoran, does this, when you hear Chandra's evoke all the changes taking place, the transformational agenda that's there, does it make your mouth water? Does it make you think, I wish we could work as fast or had as much of a vision?
Well, thank you very much, Shade. And first of all, let me express my appreciation for having the opportunity to sit among these distinguished panelists and look at the challenges which we are facing. And as Ambassador said very clearly, last year, EU and India, you didn't click my watch, so I mean, no. last year, EU and India actually had the two largest democracies in the world had elections, and I think now it's good time to take stock on the what's going on, what is happening in India, and also the opportunities of new policies which are being developed in Europe. So, first, the starting point. I think it is important to recognize that EU. Is the largest partner of India in respect of the trade, both regarding goods and services. That's very good. For the time being, it's about 100 billion euros per year, which is excellent. And also, if you look at Europe as direct foreign investor in India, this is in last 10 years about a bit less than 200 billion euros. So I think we are doing good, and I think it's also very good that here with the banner of Friends of Europe, we should be now all friends of India as well. So if you look at the track record of European engagement in India, you know very well that European industry is doing business with India for centuries. I don't know, just one ICT company, Ericsson, is present in India since 1903. And for the time being now, they have more employees in India than in their home country, in Sweden. So I think it's, in a way, it's just one of the, if you want, anecdotal examples about the relevance of the links which we have. However, now we should be happy and tap each other on our back. We are doing good, but also we should try to identify challenges and opportunities which exist. So let's put the figures which I mentioned earlier to scale with other countries. So I'll mention just Brazil, much, much smaller than India, but Europe is much more active there. I mean, it's the level of five times more. So what I'm trying to illustrate is not talk much about Brazil, but simply about the level of opportunities which exist there. So what does it mean? What does it mean for all of us here? It means that one way or the other, if you look at from our perspective, coming from DG Connect, which is responsible for information society and media and European Commission, I will, of course, talk and advocate for ICT, meaning digital India. ICT is the key driver of the economy and society. And when I talk about this, I mean, you know, just a couple of key figures. I mean, look at, okay, example of Uber. Uber did not exist 5 years ago. Today, Uber has a market capitalization at the same level of Deutsche Bank, 40 billion euros. So what I'm trying to illustrate to you that with a fairly small investment of money, ICT can really contribute a lot to the growth of the economy. And this is exactly why, for example, European Commission, our political masters are taking these things extremely serious. ICT is the main driver of the GDP growth in Europe as well. So I think one way or the other, it is not a surprise that when President Juncker took his office together with his team, they have identified digital as one of their key political priorities. Commissioner has therefore adopted just a month ago what we call digital single market strategy, which has 16 actions. And when we look at this digital single market strategy, there is quite a lot of overlap with actually Digital India. There are some specific issues which are looking at challenges which we have in Europe. I don't know, issues like copyright, issues like telecom regulation and so on, which are aiming even in broadening up the opportunities for businesses. But then at the same time, there are a number of things which are in line or very similar compared to what India is doing. I mean, digitalization of industry, skills, e-government, and so on. So one way or the other, if you look at the possibilities which are out there, I think we should be quite confident that our political masters want us to work closer together. And I fully agree with what has been said earlier, that the long-due summit, which hopefully will happen this year, could be a good opportunity where our political masters could get together and say, what do we need to address together in this respect? Now, what we are doing concretely in respect of engagement in India, I think we have quite a long track record of issues. It is not a surprise that India is one of very few countries in which we have sent our ICT counselor, one of a handful of countries where we have ICT counselor. Then we have a number of already cooperations going on. One of very important things is standardization. So there is a specific standardization forum. We actually even fund participation of Indian experts in the European standardization bodies with the objective that they would work collectively together on key standards in the domain, for example, of the 5G, Internet of Things, and so on, together with as equal partners with the objective that we will establish these standards and use them together in future. Now, looking at challenges, I think one of the challenges, of course, you know, there are a number of open issues which need to be resolved. I mean, I would just mention legacy cases of Vodafone and Nokia tax cases. However, I think what is very important is that this kind of message should penetrate all the levels of Indian administration, you know, meaning, you know, red carpet instead of red tape. Yeah. So I think that is very important message which, you know, has to go to all the levels of administration. I think also what is very important is that we work together on identifying key issues where we have an opportunities to work together and avoid some kind of Christmas tree approach. And I just indicated to you which of some of those issues where we could work together. One additional one, I think, which is very important, what we are actively pursuing now with our Indian colleagues is that we want to build business-to-business opportunities in the domain of the startups. So we are having a number of activities there, and I think in due time, hopefully by last quarter of this year, we'll have specific workshops with Startup Europe and their counterparts in India. And last but not least, because I see that my time is ran out, I think in addition to exploring bilateral issues, we have to see how we can build links on multilateral fora as well. And what do I mean here? You know that we are now in very specific time, very, very specific time in respect of the internet governance transitions. We are leading the process towards how to manage the transition of IANA stewardship as of September this year. These are very sensitive issues. What we have to do is, because India has a number of common values with European Union and vice versa, we have to see how we can actually build stronger partnership and work towards multi-stakeholder approach in this kind of transition, because only if we set up the internet governance in future right together on multilateral fora, only then we will create a global digital environment, digital economy, which could be beneficial for both India as well as for European Union. So my message at the end, when we look at these concrete bilateral issues, don't forget very important multilateral discussions. And let's be frank here, sometimes we are perceived that we are wrongly perceived that we are on the opposite lines. However, from the perspective of the values, we should be very, very close together.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zoran. That was very, very comprehensive, very complete. I just have one quick follow-up, and I know we shouldn't be comparing countries when it comes to the EU, but you mentioned Brazil. I'm going to mention China. There is a digital dialogue underway between EU and China. I think there'll be one pretty soon. Is that the kind of initiative that you could replicate in your discussions with India?
Thank you very much. I think, I forgot this, I'm sorry, but there are so many things which one would like to talk about. India, we have a dialogue with India. We have a dialogue with India. It took place just, I think, in January this year, and it's very useful dialogue. In the dialogue, I mean, let's be also frank, you know, we can clearly identify issues where we have problems, and we clearly on that dialogue, on very operational level, identify issues where we want to work together. And I think even more important, this is not just a once-per-year gathering where we talk about these issues, but then we have a concrete follow-up. So we have a dialogue with India. We just started it. That's true only, I think, in 2013. Mm-hmm. But I think at the same time, it is very, very effective instrument where actually two administrations can get together and in a very open way discuss the issues. Now with China, we also have a dialogue. It will be at the end of June. Yeah. But I think, you know, India is, because, as I said, one very important partner for us, it's also, you know, we have to see how we can explore those opportunities in the future.
Thank you very much, Zoran. I'm going to turn to Shishir and talk a little bit about Make in India. I wish I had used the term that Zoran has used, red carpet instead of red tape. And that is the image one has of the old India, if you like, the pre-Modi India, if you like, of very slow bureaucracy. And this Make in India campaign really is about speeding up things. Yeah. Why would investors from Europe head to, or anywhere else for that matter, head towards India when there are other countries, other regions around India, which seem to be much more attractive as installations, venues for investments in manufacturing?
Good afternoon. Well, before I come to Make in India, what Ambassador Puri said about myself going to the right side, you know, what he didn't say, I was earlier in a left party. So, and I'm really pleased to see Her Excellency, the Ambassador of Bangladesh, considering the fact that our Prime Minister has just had a very, very successful visit, and he has just returned from Dhaka. I cannot forget his last engagement, the speech he gave in the Dhaka University. And I had some of my Bangladeshi friends telling me, "Amar chok theke jol pore gelo." This was a painter who lives in Paris, who phoned me to say that he really had tears in his eyes. First of all, when we talk of development, what do we all refer to? Roads, ports, GDP growth, import, export. That's what we normally talk about. But the difference which Prime Minister Modi has brought to development in India is also about people's living standards. It's always felt that if the development is at a high level, there'll be a trickle-down effect and the countryside will also improve. But in a country like India with 1.25 billion people, trickle-down takes a very, very long time. And this is where Prime Minister Modi decided to do lateral injection. Swachh Bharat, which Chandra mentioned, creating toilets. This is changing the lives of especially the ladies and the girl students who are experiencing a huge amount of dropouts. Just to give you a figure, in this last 1 year that Prime Minister Modi has been in governance, the toilet schemes have developed 5.9 million toilets in the country, up 18%. One will say, well, how does it matter? It really matters in a country where people are out in the open. You will not even be able to comprehend it. Now, till you really increase the purchasing power of the average person, your real growth will not come. I mean, the growth that India should be looking at. yes, India is definitely in a high growth, shall we say, trajectory. We have, our growth rate has equaled China's at the moment. But again, before talking about the growth rate, just to give you a few points which contribute to it. Inflation. I think I've said this earlier here, and I'll repeat it. To me, inflation is like diabetes to a human system. A country plagued with inflation will have problems and problems. Indian inflation was under control, but it then spiraled out. But I'm very pleased to say that right now, our consumer price index inflation is 5%, and on the wholesale price is actually a negative of 2.3%. But of course, we have a difficult time ahead of us in the next few months because the monsoon has been projected at minus 13%. But with the granary stocks that we have, I'm sure we'll be able to overcome this without much of a difficulty. On the power sector, India has grown 8.4%. On the coal mining, 32%. Road construction, 46%. And our foreign exchange balance has increased, and we have touched a figure of $350 billion, which is up 13% in 1 year. Again, I'm back to the same numbers, which I started by saying that this is what we all do, but you can't move away from these hard numbers. With the inflation under control, the GDP has now touched a growth of 7.4% and projected for the year 2015-16 is in a range of 8.1 to 8.5%. Fiscal deficit has been brought down to 4.1%. So, macro parameters definitely look good. Make in India. Why would people make in India? Not just because Prime Minister Modi has given a slogan on the 15th August Independence Day speech. You will do it if it makes sense to come and make in India. Look at our population. About no more than one third of our population is in the purchasing power category. So what does it mean? Two-thirds of our population is outside purchasing power. That is actually a potential. When you come to produce in India, of course you have access to one of the, I would say, most cost-effective production, quality production, and a market which you won't get in any part of the world. China, most of the production in China is for exports. Hardly any production foreigners produce in China for domestic Chinese market. But when you come to produce in India, I mean, you're opening up to the entire Indian market. And as I said, the numbers, the sheer numbers. So one would come to produce in India only on a mutual win-win situation. Make in India has definitely made, shall we say, life easier. I wouldn't say easy. I'm still qualifying and saying easier. Red tape is loosening. Red carpet is being rolled out. I'm being very choosy with my words, even though I come from the party which is in government. But the fact is, the Prime Minister is really driving these issues. And we are very sure that just 1 year is over. And as time goes on, you'll really see the benefit. Shada said, is India ready to embrace the world? In Sanskrit, there is a phrase which says, Vasudev Kutumbakam, the world is my family. And that's what we'll do in Make in India. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a quick follow-up for you on Make in India, just to link it to the negotiations that the EU and India have been having for the last 8 years now on a bilateral trade and investment treaty. Do you think that once that treaty is signed, clinched, right, the deal's done, it'll make European companies slightly more enthusiastic, give that added boost to European investments in India, do you think?
Slightly controversial. We have lasted 8 years. I mean, the negotiation has gone on for 8 years, but the very fact is that EU and India have braved these 8 years. So I'm sure you understand what I'm saying. But definitely, reaching a conclusion would definitely help. Yes.
Thank you. Luisa, so far we've had a rather rosy, I won't say utopic, but a rather rosy picture of Modi's India. Can you bring in a dose of realism into how you and Business Europe, your members, view India today?
Thank you, Shada. I will try not to repeat some of the remarks that were done, but some of these points are critical to make sure that we have more investment or more European investment in India, but also more trade. Because I would not, and for European companies, the two are together. We cannot invest without trade. And this is important because sometimes we have the perception that when a country is trying to attract foreign direct investment, it believes that keeping the market closed is a way to promote foreign direct investment. And that's not the case, because our companies need also to import to make sure that they are able to produce in the country they invest. So for us, this is very important and is a key aspect. And this is also why we believe indeed, from a European perspective, that signing, concluding an ambitious trade agreement with India is an advantage and will create more opportunities for business to invest in India and to trade with India in both ways. Now, coming to our assessment of Modi's India, well, I think some of you already said, I mean, we were 1 year, so it's still pretty early to make a proper assessment. Our assessment in terms of the measures or the objectives is rather positive, because we believe, well, one aspect was already mentioning is the question of inclusiveness and bringing people, improving life standard and life conditions for the people in India. And this is very important because I have some experience of India and I know how important this is. But also making an environment that is more conducive to business. And this is not only for European or foreign direct investors in India, but it's also for local business, because our colleagues in India are facing the same problems, all the problems of red tape, a lot of regulation, a lot of bureaucracy, some lack of transparency in some cases. This is hindering our investors, but is also hindering Indian investors. So clearly, the way to simplify, the way to create less regulation, because it's a problem we are also trying to address in Europe with a so-called Better Regulation Initiative. We also have problems of excessive regulation that need to be addressed. Just to reply to Shah, the less rosy aspects. Well, the 2015 Doing Business report ranks India 142 among 189 economies. So it's something that needs definitely to be improved. And what are the areas that for us are critical? I mean, some of them were already mentioned. One of them is clearly infrastructure. That's a very key and important aspect. And it has to do with the digital infrastructure, but has to do a lot with physical infrastructure. Energy is a problem, a huge problem. We still have a lot of power cuts in a lot of states in India, and this is a problem for companies. But it's also, the other issue is that in this area, I think there are opportunities of promoting joint ventures between EU and Indian companies. And that's also why for us it's very important that we open more the Indian market to foreign direct investments in areas related to infrastructure. I'm talking, for instance, about railway. Railway is definitely an area where European companies have a know-how, are innovative, and they could help. So opening up further some of these sectors is also an important aspect for us of creating more investment. The other one is, of course, services. We also believe that we have a lot of in common there. We are doing already a lot of joint projects, but it remains for us important to open key sectors. We have done good products in good developments in, for instance, in insurance, where the equity caps are being increased. But still, we believe more has to be done also in opening up sectors to foreign direct investment. And then transparency in the system. As it was pointed out before, well, India is a big economy, is a big democracy, but it's also a very complex country because you have the federal government and then you have the states. And of course, this is increases the bureaucracy and increases the problem of having access to information and companies knowing exactly what are the rules, what are the conditions. If I want to invest in Haryana, for instance, or if I want to invest in Gujarat or whatever. So it is important that we find ways of making this information more user-friendly and more available to business so that they know exactly what they are counting on. And I also come to taxation. Taxation is a critical issue. It's a critical issue also for Indian companies. I know this is also one of the areas where the government wants to introduce improvements. Harmonization is key. We know how many years we are talking about the GST. This is clearly one of the priorities of Mr. Modi. I hope indeed that in 2016, in April 2016, the GST will be introduced, because for those of you who don't know, it will be a similar thing to the TVA or the VAT. So it is critical also to promote business in India, and it's definitely one of the areas where we believe Mr. Modi could make an immediate difference. And I will end up by saying that for any reform in India, political commitment is very important. And it's very important in the big topics to have the consensus among the main political parties. We know how difficult this is, but we also know how many times in the past important reforms could not be done because of this. So for the business community, the help from the public sector is very important. I will leave my last message saying that India, we believe India could go in the right way and is going in the right way. It's important for India to progress that it opens to the world. India is a very important market, is a market that is on the way to being more developed, more homogeneous, more inclusive, and I think foreign direct investment can and foreign trade can help also in this process. So we are open to it. We're also open to contribute to a more open market and a more competitive market as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Louisa. Chandra, I'm going to open the floor soon to questions, but I do want you to come back on some of the things you've heard about from the different panelists. And also, you travel a lot. I think you're out of a country for 20 days out of 30 every month, and you're meeting CEOs all the time. I want to turn the table a little bit. What is your view of investment and economic opportunities in Europe for a company like yours, which is global? If you could answer those questions.
I think a lot of comments are made, so I'm not going to be able to pick all of them, but definitely I'll answer a few of the ones which came in the panel. First on the FTA. I think it'll be a great thing if it can get done. It's 8 years, a long period of time, we've been at it. But there are sticky points. I think, you know, like one is discussing about all the traditional sectors, one of the things that definitely that need to get addressed is the data issue. And because, to my mind, data is the future resource. We talked about internet companies with very little investment, how GDP growth can happen dramatically. But those kind of industries thrive on data. Okay. While it is a very sensitive and complex issue from a European point of view, but unless or otherwise you find you're willing to sit down and then tackle those things head on and then find some sort of a solution, I think you're not going to be able to come up with a meaningful agreement. So that's my frank opinion. Second, in terms of taxation, I do think that at least all of us in India are of the opinion, wherever I talk to people, whenever, are of the opinion that the GST is something that's going to happen. Government is pushing very hard. So as much as you are looking for it, we are also eagerly looking for it, because many industries in India do look for transformation in taxation. I think the government has clearly acknowledged. I think the one thing that I said before is 1 year is a short period of time, and you also acknowledged it. But the government has clearly said that making doing business easy, okay, is going to be fundamental. Okay, whether it is in terms of getting away with the number of forms or the number of approvals or having transparency or having digital way of doing things. And there is enough focus and enough discussion. Whenever you talk to government, they are engaging. It's not that they are in denial, they are engaging. So I hope that all of these things will translate into results, not necessarily actions, into results, where we will find doing business becomes extremely easy. So I'm very, very, very hopeful. And like many other business people in India are, the government clearly is committed. That I can tell you. What was the other point? In terms of investments in Europe, I can tell you for my company and for our group, has made significant investments in Europe in the last 7-8 years. If you look at it from 2006-2007, particularly UK, I think we are the largest private sector employer, with the investments in Jaguar, Land Rover and Corus, and also investment in Netherlands. We acquired a company in France, and we have a huge footprint across Europe. TCS is present almost across the continent in every major location. In fact, this is our fastest growing market last year. Continental Europe, excluding UK, we grew 28% on constant currency terms last year. So we feel it's a very attractive market. It's a market in which there is a tremendous opportunity. The growth due to ICT is real in this market. We do recognize there is going to be a shortage of skills, an estimated 1.2 million people in the ICT sector. So TCS already is engaged with 200 schools across Europe. In building skills in ICT. That is, working with school children, trying to get them to take up their career in ICT. So we are working very closely. We are taking students from here, getting them to India, from Europe. They do training, or they get excited about doing work in ICT. And then they come back here. So we do a number of programs. So our group has significant investments here. And Tata Global Beverages, again, is a big investor in Europe. So I see lots of opportunity. Even Tata Power, I think, has made some forays in Europe in some investment in generating power. So it's a huge market. And I think coming together and simplifying things to operate as one market, whether it is a single digital Europe or in every single way, making it simpler will make it easy to attract investment.
Thank you, Chandra. And of course, there's also the question of labor mobility, whether it's in the WTO or in the bilateral investment treaty.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a very very important aspect as well. Because, you know, we are very connected today. I think we are still talking about, I was sitting here thinking when everyone was talking, we're talking about one single Europe. Frankly speaking, with digital, we are one single world, actually. Yeah. We are putting all these artificial boundaries. But the point is, the way the financial systems are changing, the way transactions are happening, the way these new age companies are linking different parts of the world, the way the social media works, we are single earth. So I think we have to catch up. We have to catch up. And it's very hard because it's very difficult different policies. Because we have, it's like it's a running car, right? And we've got to change a lot of rules, and it's very hard. It'll get harder. I can tell you that. Mm.
That's going to be quite an interesting debate. Thank you, Chandra. I'd like to open the floor now to questions. I see a lot of people who've been working on India, with India, for a very long time. You need a microphone. Thank you, Liam. Liam, you'll have to walk across. My friend Nawab. Nawab, please put up your hand. Oh, you've got that. All right. Sorry. No.
Oh, yes. Shada, I have a very quick journalist.
Just introduce yourself.
Yes, Nawab Khan. I'm a journalist here based in Brussels from India. I have a very quick media question. Can any Indian or EU official present here confirm that the next EU-India summit will be held around November, December in Brussels? Thank you.
Yes, we can. No, sorry, that's me. That's me. We'll come to that in a second. Yes. Jeffrey, please. We'll take your question in a second. You'll tweet it then, right?
Thank you very much. Jeffrey Van Orden. I'm chairman of the Delegation for Relations with India and delighted with all the panelists. Very interesting. A couple of questions. Well, one point, first of all, I think the EU institutions have been behind the curve and we're just catching up as far as relations with India are concerned. Everything's been a bit dormant, and thanks to the efforts of many people in this room, not least His Excellency Manjeev Puri, things are now getting on the move again, but not before time. A couple of questions, really. We've heard a lot about the successes, really, of the Modi prime ministership, and a little bit about some of the difficulties. But I'd like to pick up on the last point that Louisa made, which is really the relationship between the centre and the states, and to what extent that is a problem which Prime Minister Modi has to confront, and to what extent will it feature in the eventual FTA. And my other thought is, when we talk about Make in India, of course we have to look at the unemployment that we see in many European countries, and therefore Make in India has got to be a win-win situation, both for the businesses in Europe as well as businesses in India. And of course there are some very successful examples of that, not least one which we visited when I was in India recently, which was the British company JCB. But a couple of points there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Jeffrey. The lady, hi. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Good afternoon, Pascaline Gabory, European Newtons and Pilot Cities Platform. One of the objectives of the European regional and urban policies is to have cities smart, sustainable, and inclusive. And we know that in India there is a growing urbanization with growing needs in terms of housing construction, even sanitation, you mentioned, environmental technologies and transport technologies. So there is a partnership between Europe and China since, I think, May 2012 on sustainable urbanization. Could there be also such a partnership between Europe and India on sustainable urbanization? Because that would be also a way to promote business exchanges. Mm.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to take one more question, if there is one from the floor. Yes, please.
I'm Raja Singh from the Parliament magazine. Given how sort of dynamic Modi has arrived on the Indian political scene, he seems almost like as if he could walk on water. Is there a problem that the Indian political establishment and maybe India itself is investing too much in one man, and maybe shouldn't it be, isn't there a danger that he may be a bit like Obama, where the expectation is too much?
Thank you, Rajat. Jokowi in Indonesia also springs to mind as someone we've invested in too many, perhaps too many hopes. Thank you very much. I'm happy to take one more question if there is one. Yes, please.
Regina Llopis from Barcelona, Spain. I'm in the ICT world, and I'm worried about the future of all the challenges that we have ahead of us, and the seriousness in which we take the lack of involvement of women in the STEM-related competencies that are going to be totally needed in all of the opportunities in the labor markets that will bring the next years to come. With big data, we're talking about data, as you mentioned, are going to be central, sizing, scaling. How are we going to convince from the very early stage without, you know, giving them Barbies to play, giving them Legos to play instead and things like that, to get them involved? So we need to do something, and maybe India has a large population of women, Europe also, some of them are involved. How can we increase this percentage? So I think that probably India has already thought about that. I think there's a lot of things that together Europe and India can make it work better. So just questions for probably Mr. Chandra.
Thank you very much, Regine. Very, very good question. I was tempted to say Modi has in fact done a lot for women, and despite being a woman is just, I think, a little blot on the landscape, but he's really actually doing and a lot for women. So thank you very much for that question as well. I'm going to start with Louisa, if you don't mind. Louisa, yes, you can have my Can I have my microphone back?
Oh, there's another one. Okay, I will start maybe on the more business-oriented aspects. To pick up on Jeffrey's words, of course, I totally agree. I mean, we need to have win-win situations. When I talked about that we cannot only have investment, but we also need to have trade, I'm also thinking that, of course, European companies will not, in theory, close their investments in Europe to go and make it in India. That's not what we want, and that's not what is sanctioned politically from the EU side at this moment, because we are facing huge unemployment rates in Europe. So clearly, when we are thinking about investing in India, we're also looking at India as an opportunity, as a market. India is big enough. As many of you pointed out, it's a market with growth potential. You have a lot of population who is not yet buying. So we need to take advantage of these opportunities without jeopardizing other investments, in particular the ones that we have in Europe. And as I said, we need a more open environment. We can discuss, is Europe open or not open? We can do more, of course, in Europe. But we need a more open environment in India. And this means, of course, opening further the areas where you can have foreign direct investment. And I'll come back again to the question on the smart cities. And when I mention also in the infrastructure and in the railway, we have the innovation, we have the technology in Europe. We are highly competitive companies in this area that can help India, that can help the development, that can help promote investments in these key areas. But we need to be able to do so. So this means also opening up these areas to foreign direct investment. So clearly, I think that we can discuss, we can also in other forums try to smoothen the regulations, but also we need to see each other as complementary and not as competitors. And in many cases, we're still seeing each other as competitors. I think we can help each other improving the business environment in India and in Europe. But for this to happen, I also think we need to change this idea of being competitors and more being complementary to each other. And again, I repeat, I think the free trade agreement, it is a difficult negotiation. We know there are, in the traditional sectors, a lot of issues, clearly. Also, some of the issues that my colleague has raised in terms of data flow, I totally agree. I mean, we also believe data flows need to be part of this discussion. But it's important that we find solutions for these problems. I think having a framework agreement is helpful.
Thank you very much. I forgot Nawab's question about the EU-India summit. I wonder if someone here can put his mind at rest. Maria, can you? Or Ambassador? Okay.
I thought you answered.
Okay. So read my piece, Nawab. I think around the G20 in Italia in November is my guess. Am I on the right track? Yeah. Okay. More or less. Okay. Zoran, please.
Thank you very much. It's I think the questions are straight to the point, you know. And I think first of all, regarding the digital single market, I want to make it clear that the logic of the digital single market is to have Europe opened and functioning as one single market across the 28 member states. This is now a problem. We don't have a fully functioning digital single market, and we know that we said if we make it right, then of course it will be good for European companies, but goes without saying that it will be much, much better to any other company working and functioning in European Union. And now just to underline, I think if we talk about one real free market, I mean, you know, my services have analyzed in details the openness of the market throughout the world, and there are essentially market barriers nearly everywhere, with the exception of European Union. No, I mean, really, you can, and so if there is a really open market, it is in Europe, and I insist on that. You know, so, but I think at the same time, you know, if we make things right, if we really create a win-win situation, I think here we have a win-win situation, you know, this could be beneficial for everyone. And I mean, look at, in India, European ICT companies have created 100,000 jobs. And these are well-paid jobs. These are good, they're high-quality jobs, you know. So I think, in a way, I think in this domain, and I'm sure that for others as well, we can really have a win-win situation. Then the second thing on specific issues which were flagged, I mean, urbanization, of course, is a major challenge. If we look at the figures regarding the process of urbanization, I think it's clear that, I mean, we already have challenge now, but challenges will be even bigger in future. How to address these things? I'm sure that we have to have the policy discussions. At the same time, we have to go to specific opportunities. And here, for example, there is an opportunity of building on automotive industry. I mean, we have excellent Indian automotive industry with huge links and very strong presence in Europe as well. Automotive industry is going through a radical change now. You know all about the automated driving and so on. But I think one way or the other, you know, we have a car, a future car will be a driving platform. With a lot of, I mean, here we have a lot of regulatory issues from the, I mean, from the data, who owns the data, up to, you know, where the platforms will be produced and so on. But I think, you know, this is probably a specific sector where we can really create additional win-win situation, good for European, but also good for Indian industry. Now, on issue of data, I think there is a working group led by other services, and I think we have identified this as an issue already in 2014. However, the progress is not as good as we think it should be. So I think this is one of the issues where we need to accelerate the work on the expert level in the future. And last reaction from my side, the skills and gender. I mean, in Europe, you know, we are trying to address the ICT skills also through the push to get more girls and women engaged in ICT. And I think it's going in the right direction. In some countries more, in some EU member states more, in some less, but I think we have identified ICT skills as a major challenge. This is why it's so prominent in digital single market. We are having a number of actions, and I think in a way we are doing it right. Are we there yet? Probably not. That's why we need to work on that. But in a way, I think for India, you know, I think the gender issue, you know, it's also an issue not only of the skills, but it's also an issue of, if you want, I'll use the term democracy, you know, or freedom, you know. So in a way, you know, who are we to preach you, you know? It's in a way, these are the things which we are seeing now in the media, big changes in the right direction. I think it's just important that this gender issue is accelerated and pushed not only from the skills perspective, but also from the perspective of democracy and equality and freedom. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think you have to get some of your scientists to stop saying some rather misogynist things in newspapers and in meetings as well. But thank you. Thank you very much. Indeed. Yes, absolutely. Please, Shishi.
About the center-state relationship, this point came up. Well, first of all, before I come to that, what's common between someone in Northern Europe, in Scandinavia, or with someone in Southern Europe? Very little. That's exactly India, which is only one country. Official languages, not dialects, 20. I think 17 different scripts, you have two. Why I'm saying this? Life is a bit complicated. It's not simple. Center-state relationship, I mean, when you look at our government, we have three levels of government, federal, state, and then the city councils. Center-state relationship is a huge issue. In order to try and sort this out, Prime Minister Modi's slogan is cooperative federalism. That the government to government, that means the central government, the federal government, government of India, with the state governments would cooperate. Let me give you an example of myself. I'm with the BJP at the state of West Bengal. It really confuses the hell out of us. Sorry for the simple English. We have the Prime Minister who is in a cooperative mood with our Chief Minister, who we as a political party are battling on a daily basis. As a spokesperson of the party, I'm on television hitting at the Chief Minister, and people say, but Prime Minister is in very good terms with the Chief Minister. This A message that Prime Minister Modi has given us is that the state, the two state organs, that's the central government and the state government, will cooperate, will not battle it out, whichever political party you come from. It's for us to politically take on the other party. I think it's pretty healthy, because from a government to government point of view, we hope that we won't have these battles. But is it straight? No, it's not. When you look at the present in the numbers in Parliament, single party majority after 30 years, then why are laws getting stuck? In our bicameral Parliament, which we inherited from the Brits, but the difference is that our upper house has far more powers than the House of Lords. And in the upper house, the BJP is an abject minority. Is an abject minority. We are short of the magical number by half. That means BJP is no more than 30% of the upper house. So getting bills through upper house is an issue. And things do get stuck. But despite that, say like insurance has gone through. GST, we are pretty sure it will go through. There are one or two which are sticky, which are difficult. But why I'm saying this, that, you know, suddenly you'll think, but 282 out of 543, why things are not flowing? Just to put things in perspective. And Modi, Rajat, you spoke about investing in one person. Well, you know, when a leader is so charismatic and it appears so, but I can only assure you, being in this party system, he has got a team which actually functions pretty well under him. So it's not as individual as it appears.
I do want to raise one issue with you, Shishir. In the Indian Express, Aruna Roy and Nikhil Day have said that, and surprisingly for someone who is a man of the people, that his government really is too business-friendly and not tackling, what does they say? The callousness of the government is most noticeable in its attitude to social sector issues.
This is taking a line from the... I'm sorry, I have to become political at this point.
You're going to be insulting.
No. Our honorable opposition have given this term "suit boot ki sarkar." That means this government is all about people in suits and boots, you know, well dressed. But the actual fact is, Swachh Bharat, who does it touch? Has anyone else in our country spoken about it? I'm not saying previous governments have not done things, but such a direct initiative which touches every villager, especially the female. But this is democracy, we have free press, they're entitled to say anything.
Okay, thank you very much. Chandra, I want to give you the final word. You've got the microphone here. You've heard all our different panelists, the pros, the cons, the challenges, the positive, the negative. Give us your thought.
No, I'm not going to be able to answer any political questions. I think in summary, I would just say that there are a number of initiatives that has been rolled out. When collectively seen, all of these things are fundamentally important to make progress, and India has a huge opportunity, and nobody has questioned that opportunity in terms of the rising consumers, or in terms of the demography, or in terms of the potential we have to achieve very higher levels of GDP growth. And all these initiatives can really work towards realizing the true potential of India in the years to come. And there is always, you know, how long time is always the question. How long time is the right time to expect results to happen? And no one knows. But I think a lot of things are happening. And there's a big investment opportunity, there's a partnership opportunity for EU, especially on the words on women in ICT. My company is now 320,000 professionals. We are 100,000 women. We are 33% of our employees are women. We just crossed 100,000 women last year. We are involved in women in ICT. Promoting women in ICT in a big way, even in the US, we have an organization which promotes or which helps women to take up studies in ICT. There are 100 founding companies, founding CEOs, I was one of them. And so there are best practices and there are engagements that we have with different institutions, NGOs, in different parts of the globe, and definitely if there are opportunities in Europe, I'm pretty sure the TCS team here will be more than keen to partner, and there are others who are doing it, and this is very important because it would be a shame to miss out on a huge talent when we have a huge shortage of talent. So this is a very important issue. I'm glad you brought it up, and but there are best practices in different parts of the globe. Otherwise, I think I enjoyed being here, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chandra. Thank you very much indeed. I think the percentage has to go up to 50% to actually reflect what women are doing in the real world.
I feel sorry. It should be 100%. Why 50%?
Okay, no, thank you very much indeed. I think the conversation between Zoran and you, Chandra, really should continue because you've raised a lot of issues to do with internet governance and questions that are really related to the future of digital. So if I may ask both of you to come back, not tonight, but shortly in a few months perhaps, to talk really about the digital side of things. Our purpose today was to bring forward the changes coming through, even 1 year on, and I think the jury's is still out. Of course, it's much too early to judge, but we do get a flavor of tantalizing glimpses, if you like, of this new India that's being sketched out for us. So really, it's time to wrap up. I'm not going to say anything more, just to say do read our op-ed and do try really hard to keep this relationship, to bring this relationship back on track. And I'm looking at my friends, External Action Service and others, to do that. I think really there's untapped potential here, and we really need to give India the credit and the importance as a 21st century power that it deserves. So thank you all again. Chandra, thank you very much. Louisa, Shishir, as always, and Zoran for joining us. And thank you for your questions and your comments.